And often we look at pressure as like one big thing, which can be very hard because then we go, oh my God, how do I get out of this? And it's like, well, pressure, like what even is that? It's like when you start to shift your relationship with it. Okay, the crowd's screaming. Comment was said here. I made a mistrap, so now I've got to get one back. And so instead of seeing pressure and the relationship we have with pressure as a bad thing, pressure is a beautiful gift that actually reveals to us our tipping point, our threshold of when our state gets thrown out of whack.
Tom Wickham, welcome to the Mojo podcast. How you doing, my friend?
Very good, Rich. Thanks for having me. I feel very honored to be welcomed as a guest and invited as a guest to come and have a chat.
My friend, well, as we've got to know each other over the past sort of year or so, and we'll talk a bit about that as we go, I've wanted to get you on, talk about your story, your background, share some of that amazing wisdom that you've got, which we're going to unpack. And as you know, you're an avid listener, I know, to the podcast. I want to get a sense of your mojo and how it's tracking right now. So what's your out of 10 right now, Tom, in terms of your mojo?
Yeah, I'd say right now it probably a 7. And it's a 7, and I'd say it's fluctuated throughout the day. But I reckon 7's one of those numbers. It's kind of like you can get by on a 7, but if you're tipping into 8, 9, you know, you're probably saying it's a good day. Whereas 7's just been this little undercurrent today. It's felt like things have been a little bit harder than the usual. Bubbly, energetic 8, 9 that I would operate at.
Okay, so that 8, 9, as you say, that would be more your usual kind of maybe flow state position on an average day.
Yeah, 8, 9. I mean, that's I enjoy life, so to operate at an 8 or 9, not necessarily the hardest thing for me, which I'm very grateful and fortunate for. But yeah, 7 almost feels like just like. I'm okay. I'm good, but it's like I'm not firing.
Yeah. So talk more about that firing, exactly that. What, when I say mojo, what does that mean to you? Because I know everyone I speak to has their own take on this word, this essence. What is it? What lands for you when I ask about your mojo?
Firstly, I love the word. I think it's great, and it puts me straight into my body. It's a felt thing, and I've used that word, and I know I've shared this with you before, but I've shared this word mojo, and I've asked people how's their mojo, and whether you know what it means with language, people can pick up it through a feeling, a sense, and I think it's a felt thing. And when I think about how I would define mojo for myself, it's this inner power, or it's felt. It's like a felt truth. Or like it's my swagger, you know. Like I've got my swagger, I'm feeling it today. You know, I'm on point. I'm feeling it, and when I start to do that, I can feel the tingle, and I can start to feel myself shift. I can start to feel my mojo lift just from us talking about the presence of what mojo is. Oh, I can feel it now, and it's like being plugged into a power source, almost like our own personal PowerPoint. And I think when we're on our mojo, when we're on our swagger, it's like we're plugged into that. And I've actually, if I can, I'd love to share just a small piece of my journal that I wrote after I first heard, or I was first asked the question by you about how my mojo was.
Yeah.
And I wrote it next day, and it's called, and I hope this answers your question, but I'm excited to share this with you because this is literally stemmed from mojo. It's called the golden thread. The golden thread, this is the essence we all carry. This is the highest frequency and vibration. This is authenticity. I feel myself reaching a new threshold here. It is pleasurable and somewhere I want to return to. I get excited to vibrate along this thread. It honestly feels home, like true home, away from all inputs, and yet so attuned to all of them at the same time. When I am one with the golden thread, I feel I am not in my body. I feel I lose the judgment of the physical world and of myself. It doesn't even feel like love. It just feels silent, yet powerful beyond an explanation. It feels like creation. It feels like what sits before a heartbeat, before life, before anything in this dimension. It feels like the threshold to the expansive unknown, or the gateway to a next, to the next dimension. That's what came out of me when I was reflecting on your question to me, which was, what's your mojo? So my mojo was at a 7 when I started this. And now that you've asked me and we've gone deeper on what is mojo to me? Well, that's a long answer, but that to me is, it's like a feeling, and it's like a vibe, and it's a swagger, and it's a PowerPoint that if we plug into, it's a different thing.
Oh man, I love that. So I love firsts on this. You know, I've been doing this for best part of 100 episodes over 6 years. And I think that's the most reflective anyone has been to that question. And I know that question really landed for you when I first put it to you a little while ago, which is why, you know, you're here. But to then really sit with that, reflect on it, and journal those beautiful words is amazing. It means an awful lot to me. So thank you. I really, really appreciate that. And I know the listeners will be getting something like, wow, okay. Where are we going to go today? I think we're probably getting a little sense of that from our opening, but I love that, like this golden thread, this essence, this swagger, this PowerPoint that we have this connection to. So
right now I'm running out of 9 now. I'm feeling it. I'm maybe even a 10.
There we go. From that slightly edgy resistant 7 where we started, we're up at a 9. Now we're in the flow. Now we're going.
Yeah. Now we're rocking.
So Tom, tell me, and we'll tell, you know, people that are listening who may not know you backstory, what will be the most useful for people to know a bit about you before we jump into our conversation? You know, going deeper into mojo, and you know, when your mojo has been actually under fire at various points, under pressure, what would be good for people to know?
Fascinating question, and my head goes everywhere. I'm quite a deep thinker. I'm quite a reflective person, and I'm not in an exhaustive way, but it gives me energy to find the root of something. And I have this investigative hat, and I've always been like that. If we talk about the doing me, I'm a father, I'm a partner, I was an athlete. I'd say I still am an athlete. I think we're all athletes. It's a spectrum. An athlete in hockey. I represented my country for the best part of 10 years. I'm a business owner. I'm a lover of cycling. I'm a lover of learning the deeper aspects of ourself and of others and of people. I am curious. And probably a word I would not have really said I am, but I'm curious beyond belief now that feel like I'm really plugged into what I love to learn about. And these are all just small playgrounds in which have made me the whole loving, truthful being that I am. I'm high energy. I lean into that. I used to feel like I had to suppress that because it almost felt like it was overbearing for people, but the more I learned to let that out in a clean and energetic way, the more that seems to lift others' mojo. And so, I mean, I'm not sure where you want to go with that, Rich, but I'm a lover of life, and I am curious beyond belief.
You know, as you said, that question takes you off into all these different territories. There's a load of different territories we can go into. And I suppose, you know, one lens I'm going to put in here is your life. And you said, I was an athlete. I still am an athlete. We always are, as you say. And your experience of being an elite athlete, that's definitely something I'd love to explore in part. Because I know, you know, we've spoken a bit about, you know, your views on performance and pressure and things that, you know, people who might not see themselves or, you know, work in those kind of elite areas, but they're still doing their thing, and how they can apply that. Because what I get really interested in is applying someone's experience to your own life, right? You know, I don't have to play Olympic field hockey for Australia, as you have, be a Commonwealth gold medalist like yourself. But I'm really interested in what is it that Tom has learned along the way that allowed him perhaps to, you know, to exist at these echelons, these high levels of, you know, of performance and enjoy it and perpetuate it? Because, you know, you had a long career. And so try and draw some of those lessons in without it being, you know, there's a lot of cliches around, you know, sport and business. They're similar, but they're very, very different. I know that. But I think, you know, from what my audience really likes is just getting, what is it that I could just take from Tom's wisdom and experience today that I could just start to apply? Does that make sense? That's kind
yeah.
of the,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
the,
for sure.
I guess, the angle of it, the opportunity of it. And with this, as I said, with this series, and one of the key areas I'm asking everyone is around those, you know, those times in life, in career, where, you know what, it's been really hard. It's been, you know, the dark night of the soul. It's like, what is going on here? This isn't what I planned. How have I got myself to this? And crucially, how have I come out the other side of it? Mm. So, you know, this sense of, say, mojo under fire. So if I were to give you that focus of when in the hockey career, where were the really hard yards, Tom, for you, where you're in that kind of, okay, this is a big learning. what's going on here,
Rich? It's I find talking about my career, as in my athletic career, quite fascinating. And you almost see sports these days search for hardship and how someone made it through the other side. And it's like, that's the story. You know, they went through the gutter and they made it through the other side, and here we are. And I wouldn't say I had any one moment. For me, it was like my whole career was just like this mirror I had to keep trying to butt my head through, all because of me. But hockey, as much as if we were looking at it from the outside, to some people now, they would go, dual Olympian, dual Commonwealth Games, gold medalist, World Cups, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And you look at that from a reflective point, it's like, mate, your life can't have been that hard. Sure. And when you look at it, when you're in it, it's like, man, this guy is just like too dumb to quit in some regards. And for me, hockey always had a lot of, like, just a lot of tension involved in it. But for me, it almost felt like an escape from my the other realities in my life, whether it's from a little boy. You know, I wouldn't say my parents were that present, for different reasons, which I'm happy to go into. But for me, hockey became this place where I found belonging. And then it very quickly turned into where I really learnt to hone the mask of performance, the ego, the right. false essence. And I think sport, quite often, at large, I mean, not even sport, us as people, I see sport as a mirror for so many other aspects of our life. But for me, when I went to hockey, it was my opportunity to prove my worth. It was my opportunity to try and belong to something. And because that's what I wanted so much, all it did was bring tension to that environment. It was like I was doing everything that I wanted, that I pushed so hard for, I was pushing away. Like a magnet, when you put them against each other and they're trying to, and it's like, I'm so close,
yeah.
But, and that's what hockey was. It was like this thing that, like, the more I wanted to play for my country, the more I wanted to belong, the more I wanted to find my way in this world, it just like pushed against the rest of my life and the rest of my being. And hockey, I love the game of hockey. I used to say I owe so much to it, but now I've really feel like I've shed that skin and I'm ready to let go of hockey. Because it gave me a home, it gave me direction, it gave me the mission. And I used to speak about the mission as if, like, get out of my way, I'm on a mission. Win at all costs, succeed at all costs, whether that was at a cost to relationship with loved ones, with family members, with friendship groups, with other career opportunities. It really was like, that's the way that I can find worth, is to be this Olympian, consolidate my spot within the team. And I pushed so hard that I pushed so much that I was looking for a way. And I understand this is very top line and there's a lot in this, but that's what hockey was for me for so long until I started to unpack myself, not the hockey player. I've always been a really curious person. I've always looked at the depth of things and always tried to make meaning of things. And I was always really curious about myself and others and dynamics and how things work. And for me, I started to search for other things, other coaches, other, you know, self-help reading, different forms of psychology and other successful people, and started to look to see how those things could be worked to help me perform better. It was all about performing better, how I could be a better hockey player. And once I started to unpack that, it was like the way to perform better is to let go, is to meet all these beautiful learnings and gold nuggets from all of these different sources I'm finding and start to apply them to my being, my essence. It's like instead of it being another framework or another thought or another mindset trick or hack or whatever, and honing my mask, which is pulling me further away from who I want to be, I started reorientating that and going, actually, if I start to add these tricks and gold nuggets to my essence, my truth, my golden thread, I will meet those and bring those, my gifts into the world through these different tools that I'm acquiring. And for me, my career just went through the roof. I became a consistent player. I was picked consistently. I scored consistently. I started to stack the wins. And that was all the last six or so years of my career, when my career seemingly from the outside looked like a success.
Okay. So much in there. I guess what I was really drawn to was I got this sense of, I don't know, these two Toms, the one who was, you know, striving, he said, sacrifice everything for the pursuit of the success, the performance. And then, and this is why you're still playing, I got this sense, is a different curiosity came into place where I could do this differently. There's a different way of coming at this. And that's when you started, I guess, learning from other sources. You know, it's always interesting, you know, we find the mentors, the gurus who support us. And what I got was you started looking at life differently. And that was mid-career. That was as you were playing. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there was an instance where I had a mirror shined at me. And at the time it was our culture coach who sat down, and it was midway through 2019. And the conversation was, Tom, you are a great team man. You've got great leadership skills. You have great knowledge for the game. At this point, I was also coaching within hockey, and you care deeply about this team, and you clearly pour yourself into it. And that's admirable. But you're worried about everyone else but yourself. And at the time, I was like, what the fuck are you saying to me? Like, you're saying I care deeply. You're saying all these great things, but you are saying like I'm pretty much at the end of my career. That was the conversation. It was like, we think you've hit your peak, and we're going to start looking at people that are at your level or not quite, but they're a bit younger. So the investment's worth kind of inputting into them. Yeah. And I remember leaving that conversation just bitter and dark and hurt, like I didn't belong. Yeah, that feeling of just like everything I'm working towards, this one thing that I find this sense of belonging, which I really didn't feel like I belonged, but it was this thing I was gripping to, is about to be taken away from me. And I was like, man, I gotta figure this out. It's like I wanna be the one that uses this thing, hockey, to its fullest. Like, I'm not ready to let this go. It's an interesting, because there becomes the paradox of, and like, to let go is to actually let go. It's just probably going to give you the outcome. Anyway, so I went all in, and I created this mantra, which was do my job. And I was like, I'm going to stop worrying about other strikers. I'm going to stop worrying about, you know, the team culture. And it wasn't to like not care about it, but it was only from bringing like my, and I don't like the word best, but my highest version, the all of me, Tom, to the party, be it in a huddle, in cool downs, in the way I move through hotels with my teammates. I was like, I'm just going to do my job. If you want to rock up late, that's on you. If you want to do something here, do that. If you want to play that certain way, you play that certain way. And I was just like, worry about me. And it became like a tool of investigating around what did my job actually mean. And for me, doing my job is whatever the moment is asking of me right now. And you can take that into life. It's like, what's the moment asking of me right now? Of me right now, not everyone else. What should be, or our expectations, or what we perceive as a failure and success. It's like, what's the moment asking of me right now? And that could go many different ways, but it's like, well, what is the moment asking of me? It's all I can do is lean into what's true to me right now. That's the golden thread. What is true to me right now? And if it's in the context of a game of hockey, it could be run, mark, lead for the ball, pass the ball, eliminate, shoot, score. And so I let go of everything else apart from what was true to me right now. And so do my job, do my job, do my job on repeat. And that was all it was. Every team meeting we would sit in and the coaches may break down a defensive play and it had nothing to do with me. I was a striker. I'd go, from my context, what does it have to do with me? And so I would start to look at the game and go, okay, we're talking about how to get the ball out of defense from, say, left half, okay? And that's got nothing to do with me. We're not even talking about strikers. But if I can figure out what part I can play in that, which is, okay, when that play is happening, in my context, when I'm on the field as a striker, my job is to start to prepare myself to get ready to get the ball, for instance.
Mm.
What's the moment of me asking of me right now as a father? I've got a 2.5-year-old who's yelling at me. I'm trying to have a conversation while my lovely partner Candace is cooking dinner, and I come out because I'm excited to share something with her, and then I've got my 8-month-old who's crying. And it's like, what is the moment asking of me right now? Am I in my pig head just trying to talk louder over everyone and get my point across because it's about me and it's admirable that I'm trying to serve the family? Or is it like, no, the moment of me asking right now is to allow Candace to cook the meal, settle my son, give him the love and attention he needs, and go and be with my 8-month-old. Like, that's what the moment's asking me. That's truth. Leaning into that. And so when I think
I love that. Yeah, sorry. That's exactly what I mean. That parallel you just made there between that mantra that served you well in that, you know, maybe the second half of your career, to taking that, right, here's me as a father. Here's me as a leader. Is me as a business owner, that do my job. I absolutely, you know, so simple, but so meaningful. And I saw, you know, that I could only imagine from an energy point of view, instead of, as you said, there was me worrying about everything, all the outcomes of things people weren't doing, were doing the right way, the wrong way. And then you go, well, let me just, how do I just focus that energy on me within the team context? Because obviously this is a team sport we're talking about, but I also get this acknowledgement of I'm an individual with my own, you know, my own unique frequency and vibration doing my thing. And how can I best serve by, you know, do my job? And that, you know, I'm sure people can work, whatever their context, they can take that away into their day to day and go, right, how am I doing my job? Because I think this is an area where people get, in my experience of working in organizations, in large corporates, people get very distracted from doing their job to thinking about everyone else doing their job. You work in a lot of businesses and corporates, and you're seeing that yourself?
Absolutely. I only had a conversation with a client yesterday who was on the grind. Everyone comes to me because I'll fix it. I wear the burden, and then I think, and then I go to bed and I can't stop thinking. I wake up early and I'm jacked when I wake up in the morning. And we had this conversation. And it's like, what's true to you right now? And I meant in this coaching session. And he said, I just feel like I'm wearing it all. And I was like, okay. And then just by him saying that and naming it and accepting that, he was just like, loosened up a bit. And now there's a whole depth to go through there, but it was like the acknowledgement of like, yeah, mate, that's how you actually feel. That's okay. Not push that away and keep on the grind track. Like, just keep on going. Just keep on pushing, because that's what business is. That's what life is. And that's what we call hard work. And I'm happy to give you my definition of hard work if you want. But what I'd also love to just touch on in that, what we've just been unpacking is this alignment of our purpose and the team's purpose. And if you think back to what I said before, it was admirable that I cared so much about the team. I cared about the mission of the Kookaburras, the Australian men's hockey team, which was to be truly the world's greatest hockey team, or to win a gold medal at the Olympic Games, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I cared so much about that, that anytime something potentially like created a little bit of deviation from that mission, it was never going to be good enough. Someone makes a mistrap in a game, it's like, not good enough. Someone rocks up late to a meeting, not good enough. So you're creating a standard and expectation which is built around the greater purpose. And it's like, well, actually, the best way I can serve this team is to give all of me, consistently put out good performances, express myself with clean fuel, show up to the world where people want to be around me with clean energy. I'm energetic, as you can tell, but it's like, it's different. It's a different magnet. It's like the magnet's been flipped and people want to be a part of it. And it's like, yeah. So to serve my family, my business, my clients, and you can overlay this into any context, it's like, my purpose is to be the man my younger self would aspire to be.
Ooh.
It's to be the man.
Yeah.
And so when I show up to the Kookaburra's purpose with that, it doesn't matter if someone makes a mistrap, because how would I show up to that moment if I'm being the man? I'd do my job, whatever the next moment is asking of me, which is not berate someone. It's not get frustrated because they made a mistake. It's not et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, how would I show up? Which is in my truth. Just show up with what's true to me right now, which is do my job. So when you let go of trying to hold on to the team's context or the business context or the family context, and it's like, the best way for me to serve that purpose is to live my truth, live to live my purpose. And my purpose is to be the man my younger self would aspire to be. And it's moment by moment. It's like a renewable contract. I will never catch that. It never stagnates. Like, truth isn't something that just happens and it's now we catch it and we're done. But it's also not something that's forever outside of us. It's like a spectrum, truth. And my purpose to be that man is like something, it's everlasting. And I get to choose moment by moment how I will show up, moment by moment. And if I slip off, great. How does that very next moment, how does that very next Tom show up? Does he go back down and be a victim to what I did that I wished I didn't do? Or do I get to show up and go, no, this is how I would show up. This is how I show up in this moment now, from something happening that I would prefer not to have happened, but now I get to choose how I show up, which is to be that man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love it. And this sort of higher awareness that is enabling choice, which is what I'm kind of getting from whatever you're talking about. There was a story that you mentioned to me before about, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was this, maybe the selection game for the Paris Olympics. I know this was a pretty intense moment for your career. I think it was after the conversation I think you'd had, obviously, with the culture coach, and you're switching your mindset about, you know, from everyone else's problems to doing my job. But you were just talking to me about that moment. I think you were lining up for the anthems, and there was, I'm getting this sense of, you know, you had a choice at this moment. You could have gone either way with something. Tell us a little bit about that story, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. I've got two, but I'll share this one. This one will be first. But
yeah.
The story was about, it was the last game that we got to play. It was against England in London before the Paris Olympics were going to be selected, which was a couple of weeks after, once we'd got home back to Australia. And I'd been playing pretty well. I've been playing my role as a senior player at this point, and there were some other younger players that were definitely performing and could have most definitely put their hand up for selection. And rewind three and a half years ago before that, in Tokyo, I missed the initial selection, and we'll park that for a moment. But I knew in this moment, I was like, I was feeling a bit under the weather. I think I was getting a bit of a bug. I played pretty well. I was a bit sore, and I had all the excuses coming into my head around like why I should perform poorly today, why I should put out a bad performance.
And
I remember standing at the national anthem. And at this point, my first son, Bobby, was, he was only about 5-6 months old. And Candace on the phone a couple of nights before had just said, like, if you get picked, I think we might fly over and watch. And I was like, oh God, that'd be pretty amazing. But don't feel like you've got to do that, rah, rah, rah. And I remember standing in the national anthem and I was like, I'm feeling a bit sore, not feeling that great. Got to put out a good performance. You know, you don't want to let yourself down. Like, you're almost there. Like, oh yeah, but you're sick. Churn. And then this thought came across me and it was like what Candace had said. And I instantly got this sense. I was like, you don't get to choose. And this was just my, like, how I shifted myself. It's like, you don't get to choose to let your family down. Now, obviously I do. But in the context of being the man my younger self would aspire to be, it was like, how will I show up to this moment right now? And so I closed my eyes before, like, in the national anthem, and I remember just, like, standing there, and I was like, you get to choose. Like, be the man. Be the man. Like, lean into that. Like, when everything's telling me to run away and be a little boy and be scared and, like, let all the excuses come in, like, how do I stand in that fire and go, nah, center yourself. Like, because metaphorically and now quite physically, I have two boys. When they look back, if there was little Tom Wickham sitting up in the stand looking back at me and goes, you know, and you could read into and peel back my and look into my thoughts and go, oh, that's exactly how I want to show up. That's exactly what I would have done in that moment, which is center yourself in the moment, ground yourself when everything's telling you to run away. Let the noise of, you know, your family might come over, haven't been picked yet, and go and play the game. And yeah, I went and played the game. And I think in the first couple of, like, the first 5 minutes, or I can't remember exactly, it's definitely in the first quarter, I scored a goal and away we went. We won 5-0. And I was like, wow, it's just a game of hockey. I get to choose.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I know that, you know, that's such a key mantra to a lot of the work that we do. You know, referencing True Freedom Leadership's an organization we both work with, and our friend Bodhi obviously brought us together. But that sense of, you know, I mentioned awareness and then choice is, again, simple words, but not actually that easy to deliver on. Because as you said, that you line up for the anthem, all this noise going on, all this weight of expectation, but I guess that, where does that expectation come from? It comes from ourselves. We're kind of placing it on ourselves, that level of pressure. So I'd love to just get into pressure, because that, you know, pressure, again, that's something anyone can and does experience. How do you now maybe view pressure versus maybe when you were, I don't know, maybe earlier on in that career, when you were talking about the younger Tom who were like, I'll do anything to get into that team, to get a win, to have the performance, anything goes. And I get a sense that's probably shifted for you. Tell us a bit about pressure.
When I think about pressure, they're conditions that are applied to our state of being. A state of being everything that is present to us in this very moment, be it physical, to past events, history, mental, you know, other things that are all happening. They're all informing us. Our emotions, our energy, poor sleep, a diet. It's all bringing us into a certain state of being. And external conditions are applied. You know, in the context of hockey, it could be had a bad night's sleep, the umpires are being a bit more up and about, and they're blowing things, and it's all against us, victim mentality. The parents are in the crowd, mum and dad are cheering on, I don't know, making this stuff up. Could be a thought that comes across your head when you're standing at the national anthem, like your son and your partner are going to come and watch you at the Olympic Games. They're all external things, and we go and make meaning of that, and then that starts to apply pressure to us. And often we look at pressure as like one big thing, which can be very hard, because then we go, oh my God, how do I get out of this? And it's like, well, pressure, like what even is that? It's like when you start to shift your relationship with it. Okay, the crowd's screaming, comment was said here, I made a missed trap, so now I've got to get one back. Parents are at home or children are at home, whatever. They're all external things being applied to our state of being. And obviously there's a tipping point. There's like a threshold in which you're going to break. You know, like you put a lighter on the bottom of your hand, there's going to be a moment where like the lighter gets too close and someone's going to pull away. Someone else, that might be a different point. And it's like that pressure is going to build to a point, to a breaking point. And so instead of seeing pressure and the relationship we have with pressure as a bad thing, pressure is a beautiful gift that actually reveals to us our tipping point, our threshold of when our state gets thrown out of whack. And so for me, pressure for me was not really ever in a game of hockey. Pressure for me was like the relationships I had at home, the sense of belonging, you know, like other life events that had taken away. I'm like, I get to go and play hockey. Like no one's dying. Like it's not that bad.
And that
became a bit of a thing for me. Like I love to play in the big moment. I wanted to play in big games. I that was when often when I was best, and not just big games, but big moments in my career, like non-selections or about to be dropped from the team or doing silly things outside of hockey that had directly impacted me. And it's like, okay, now how do I move through this? It was like, I almost like needed the pressure because it gave me a thing to fight against. And then when I shifted my relationship with like what pressure was, and it was like, man, this is an orientation back to that golden thread, back to that mojo, back to that truth.
Yeah.
And so the way I like to now think about pressure is like pressure becomes applied to our state of being. And when we're in a nice coherent state, coherent being aligned with all things that are currently present, the goal is not to be in a coherent state. It's not really a goal at all, but it's to live in that truth. It's to live in that center point. And when we're in a coherent state of being, it allows us to orientate to that easier than being in distortion and fragmented and stuff going everywhere. And the more pressure that's applied, the more it starts to chink at that state of being. But you still get to choose when you're in this kind of fragmented state if you're really, really strong on what that truth is. And so for me, it's like there is a tipping point. Obviously, like, but what is that? And the hardest thing you've ever done is the hardest thing you've ever done. And there's a spectrum for everyone. And playing a big game of hockey for me, like an Olympic final, it was just like, man, I felt so cool. So like grateful to be there. I was like, it's just a game of hockey. Like I'm good. Like whatever. And I know some of my teammates were like really gripped onto that because there was an identity to this outcome of like, what it was. For me, I was like, I'm not like whatever from that. Like, man, I'm just playing hockey and I'm just that little boy playing hockey. And I know why I play hockey because I love it. And once I started to orientate around that, I was like, man, we could win, lose, get a gold medal, get a silver medal. I'm good. Like,
yeah.
And the pressure.
And that just strikes me. So, yeah, exactly. That how to. Different players on the same team, different team, whatever, team sport, individual sport, can just view or give different meaning to that pressure. I say all that, the perhaps very similar external situation, but very different internal application of that. And there's you, I love that, you know, I'm just playing this game that I love. What could be better? Versus a colleague of yours holding on, like, this means everything. This could be, I could be an Olympic champion. I could, or, you know, a Commonwealth champion, whatever it might be. And then I can just almost, for me, I can feel that tension elevate. And I can only guess that whether it's a sporting context, business context, family context, when you're under internal or you've created internal tension, the chances are you're probably not going to be operating from a place that you prefer to. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I love to think about like often performance gets lumped as if it's like this big, like one big thing that's just like we name it performance and it's like, well, what is it? What's performance? Performance is an expression of our state of being. So you and I are both hockey players, for instance. And we both had the different skill set. We both had different capabilities in the way we played the game, the way we express ourselves in that context, the context being hockey. And we express ourselves. And if I come from a place of tension, tightness, allowing all those external conditions to create pressure to my state, I'm going to still express myself. I'm still going to perform. We're always performing. We're always expressing ourselves. And performance is like our behavior, the way we communicate, the way we do things. Yeah. The way we do things is the performing. And when you start to think about performance in a bit of a different way, it's like, well, what's the outcome? The outcome is purely an event. And then that event happens. So we lose a game. And then I go, that wasn't good enough. So I now make meaning of that event. And then I go, that was a bad performance. I'm not good enough. I need to get better. All these labels, all the meaning that we start to apply to this event. And then we go, I know what I've got to do. I've got to add more things. I've got to do better things. Add more capabilities. Add. New framework, new performance structure, new mental coach, more of this, less of that. It all comes from more or lack. So it's like, I've got to perform better because then I'll get the outcome. Then I'll be good enough. Then I'll be fulfilled. Then I'll be that champion. Then I'll be the person that everyone said I could be, which is all meaning making of the outcome, which is win the game, win the championship. No meaning, purely just an outcome. It's an event that happens. And then when we do that, we go, now I can perform and now I'll be better at this and that, right? And it's like, we don't talk about any of that. We just lump performance as this thing. It's go and perform better. Go and do more. I've got to be better. It's always in the pursuit of optimizing and performing and like never ending, adding. And it's like, well, what if we met this state of being? What if we could regulate our state of being so we come with clean energy? Because I'm going to express myself no matter what. And performance is the expression of our state. So if I want to play a good game of hockey, is it better for me to be all jacked up and tense because I'm applying meaning to something, which is starting to become pressure? And now I'm tense. My nervous system's all jacked. I'm making meaning. I'm in my thoughts. I then go and express myself, which is in this context, hockey. I come out with tension. I make a few mistakes. I mistrap the ball. That's the outcome. Yeah. And then I go and make meaning of that. Oh, I'm not good enough. I've got to try and do more. I've got to perform better. Instead, it's like, come with clean energy. How do I regulate my state? How do I come into a game aligned and coherent and present? Because from that, I will naturally express myself. And given the capabilities that I have in that context, which was, I was a hard worker. I had a good knack for scoring goals. I created scoring opportunities. I was like willing to get hit. So I found myself in scoring opportunities. I had a good sense of the game and where to be at the right time. And I was like, that's how I express myself in this context of hockey. And I come into that expression with clean energy, clean fuel from a clean state. What's the paradox of this is, what type of outcome am I more than likely going to get? The one that we're trying to do so much of, like, and hang on to. It's like, for me, outcomes are outcomes. And it's like, we can make meaning, but if we allow the meaning to be our identity, that's where we become really unstuck. Yeah, so for me, a lot of my coaching is about unpacking out what performance is. And it's like understanding that meaning's important to a degree. Outcomes are important. The way we express ourselves, and even just that word, when you say it, it's like it feels good. It's like touches on that string, that golden string. It's like the expression of living. Like, how am I going to go and play hockey? How am I going to do business, fatherhood, relationships when I'm expressing myself from my truth, my state of being, of coherence? It's going to take a different form to Rich's truth, Rich's golden thread. It's going to express itself differently outwardly to the world. But that's not for me to try and be like Rich. It's for me to be my truth. And from that expression, that's when I think about playing hockey, and it's like, that's the love of the game. Building business in that expression, that's the love of the game. Talking about mojo from that expression is like, let's do it all day. I'm plugged into that that PowerPoint.
And I love this, you know, you talked about it a fair bit, and you know, this sense of clean energy. And I know you said that younger career you were like? There was a lot of expression of energy and, you know, sometimes you didn't quite know how to contain it, where to direct it. But this sense of this clean energy that you've tapped into now, how are you, let's bring it more up to date now, how are you applying that to your everyday now? And you've talked about these aspects of yourself now, Tom, obviously still an athlete, father, husband, business owner, coach. Where do you see that clean energy, like, you know, materializing?
Again, I got asked this question from the same client yesterday, who's big thinker, a lot of external pressures, or at least the meaning he's giving it. And I started to talk a little bit more about like leaning into this truth. And he was almost like, it was almost like, you're getting a bit woo-woo for me. And he goes, can you give me some examples? And I was like, mate, I'm happy to give you all of the outward things that are going to help you make meaning of this. And I was like, the point where I started to really lean into this, I was in a relationship which we were bringing the worst of ourselves, that long-term relationship. I was engaged before my partner. That relationship ended. Now I have a loving relationship, and I love Candace to death. She's my best friend. I have two boys. I'm building a business. We've bought a house. From the hockey context, dual Olympian, dual Commonwealth Games gold medalist, World Cups, scored 50 goals for my country. I'm just a boy from the middle of Australia, from Alice Springs, who was told I was going to be in jail. And it's like, when I leant into my truth, like, how does it materialize? What is my life now? What, like, it is all from the game plan. The game plan is to lean into truth, is to be that man every moment, because that is the answer. The answer is there. You know it. You just got to be really truthful with yourself. That's not to say I don't have moments where I let myself down or let others down, or I blow up and I get the shits with things, and, you know, that threshold of pressure, I dip into it. But I can get myself out of it like that, because I go, back on board, Tom. Like, you know the way, which is to lean into my truth. And so I go, like, what more evidence do I need? Like, this is great. I live my truth. I'm free. And this is like, it is unplugged, untapped energy. It's like, man, that is a different frequency from a lot of my life. And I'm thankful for all of that, because it has given me so much wisdom. I would have felt so uncomfortable saying that, but it has given me lived experience. It's given me a PhD on myself. And it's like, it's in all of us. The more we look outside for the meaning of things, the more we get pulled away, the more we hone the mask, and we just get further and further away from ourselves. And it's like, return to that essence, and like all of these other gifts continually unfold. So for me, it's like, well, the proof's in the pudding. I am the example, as we all can be, if we choose to lean into that truth.
I love that, Tom. Love that. And what, I don't know, to sort of, you talked about referencing younger Tom, and what advice would you give to, let's say there's a younger version of you, me, listening today, I know, a young man in their 20s. And I know this is generic, but what would be your, here's my best advice for you, almost talking to yourself as the younger Tom, what advice would you want to leave at the end of today?
I'd want to give him a hug and tell him I love him. Like, I longed for that. That was something. And it's like, to learn to love yourself is such a beautiful gift. And like, it's to say that from like where, like, I would have felt really uncomfortable to say that, to a point where when I started to say it early days, it like made me feel emotional to say that. Now it's like, now I just feel strong saying that. It's like, I love myself. Like, truly, like, I know I'm a good person. I know I am of value to myself and to others. When I'm in my truth, when I'm in that loving essence of myself, when I'm on my mojo. And so what I would want to say to them is I love you, I see you, and I'd want to give them a hug. And then you go, well, that's all well and good, but then there comes the moment where they go their way and I go my way. It's like, well, now what do you do with that? So how do you make it practical so people can start to unpack it? And it's like, find, I'd almost be tempted to say, I want to walk alongside you so that this isn't just one interaction, so that we can unpack and I can walk alongside you on your journey to loving yourself, back to your truth. Because to just have a quick interaction, this is where my head goes with that question. It's like, give them a hug and say, I love you, and on your way, mate. It's like, it's almost like it's not a sustainable way. It's not a way that's going to. So it's like, I want to give you a hug. I want to say I love you. And I want to say, I will walk alongside you. It comes with the disclaimer of that. That's not to say I will fix you. That's not to say I will wear your responsibility. It is, I will walk alongside you if you own it and you take responsibility, because that's very different to being Mr. Fix-It or walking alongside someone and wearing their stuff. It's like, because that's not my truth. I will walk alongside you with love and I will give you a hug, but you're going to lean into it and you're going to be responsible and take ownership for yourself. That's what I would want to say. And that is almost the invitation to that young 20-year-old man.
Yeah. And I love how this comes back to your mantra from earlier, you know, do my job. You know, I'll be my best service I could be to you is doing my job, and I'm not fixing, solving, doing it for you, but I'll be here. So love that. And I, you know, so much in here that I know people are going to take away and listen to and get an awful lot from. Tom, how can people best find out more about what you're doing, you know, in the coaching world, for example, now? How can people get in touch?
Yeah, website is gccoaching.co, or you could find gccoaching.co on Instagram, or you can find my personal handle, which is TJ Wickham. Or you can listen to the Game Changer podcast, which is recently launched, and yeah, having some fun with that and unpacking more of the world of performance and self and all of the things that come with us and this messy life of being a human. We've got some big things coming. I've just gone into business with a great friend, and we're totally reshaping the way we're going about things. So I'm really excited for what the next 6 months holds for the Game Changer business. Yeah, watch this space, but yeah, follow along and appreciate all the love and support.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure people will be following along, Tom, and listening in. And mate, thank you so much for sharing all of that. You know, we unpack some areas. There's a load more we can do. Maybe we'll have you back again one day, but I really, really appreciate what you brought to the Mojo podcast today. Thank you, Tom. I'll see you soon.
Rich, thank you.